I'm excited to welcome back my husband, Wes, to the podcast to continue our conversations on his perspective on all things fatherhood, this time specifically discussing home birth, his role during the birth itself, and his role postpartum. He talks about the stats and research that helped him feel comfortable with home birth as a first-time dad with our son, and what he thought of the experience as it took place, as well as some tips for birth partners in general. He gives us his philosophy on managing the postpartum workload with pride as a partner, happy to provide in this way while baby and I rest and recover. And then at the end, we had a few random rapid-fire questions from listeners about taking care of himself amongst it all, like how does he do that, being tired in general, and then about the adding of more siblings, more children into the family, and how he manages that idea. Let's go.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
The metabolic needs of pregnancy, postpartum healing, and making breast milk require more minerals than in other times of your life. And staying truly, deeply hydrated during these times is very important. Nowadays, there are more options for this than ever, and ingredient quality manufacturing integrity is very important for Dr. Leah and I. That's why we love Redmond Relight electrolyte powders. Mined in the USA, Relight contains Redmond's ancient unrefined sea salt with 60 plus trace minerals in addition to the appropriate proportions and forms of calcium, potassium, chloride, and magnesium that pregnant and breastfeeding moms need. Pregnancy demands a huge increase in blood volume and synthesis of an entire new baby, and that requires, you guessed it, minerals. This is the perfect blend to be sipping on during your labor or to have mixed into your bedside water bottle during breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, strawberry lemonade, or lemon lime. Grab a sample pack option to try them yourself and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off your order of any of the products that Redmond has to offer, including their OG sea salt, other seasoning salts, natural toothpaste, bentonite clays, and more. Happy hydrating! Okay, welcome back to the podcast, my husband Wes. We have an episode from maybe last season or two seasons ago where we discussed, or you discussed, the transition into fatherhood and sort of the philosophy of fatherhood that you take, because it's an interesting, unique perspective and people really, really loved it and had so many more questions for you. We'd already had kind of the rest of these next couple of seasons planned out. And so this is where we can fit in your part two here. And we have a slew of different things that we're going to talk about. So welcome, welcome back, and thank you for being here.
Hey, thank you for having me again, and I was really happy with the popularity of the first episode. So I'm Graham Hancock on Joe Rogan. I'm running it back. Here we go.
Yeah, here we go. So if you guys haven't listened to that one, it'll be in the show notes. Check it out, because it was very well liked, and I think it's well said too. Which you have just a very unique perspective on several things in your life, but then particularly about the way that life has multiple chapters in a book and how we have to adapt and change and become different sort of people. Not, I mean, different people, but your character role in a family dynamic is different than when it's just you and your partner, or when it's just you alone, single in the world. And I think sometimes people sort of forget that, or they don't necessarily intentionally take that thread with them while their life is actively changing. And when you're in your family building mode, which most of you are because you're listening to this podcast, it requires a lot of this sort of editing of the self and leveling up and shedding other bad things or bad habits or things that just don't serve us anymore or that aren't able to happen anymore. And so you sort of take that perspective in this fatherhood lens, and it was just really awesome to be able to get that all down and recorded. And so then now this one today, people have some like specifics, and I can kind of like guide us through this conversation. We're going to rapid fire. We're going to talk about your perspective on home birth, postpartum, specifically what were you doing postpartum to support me? How has that changed between the babies? You know, we have four now. And then some specifics too on just like you like transitioning and the idea of adding more kids. What has that been like, et cetera? So do you have a particular place that you want to start?
I mean, we can start at the top of the page here.
Okay.
As it comes to babies, you kind of in your personal development, let's say, of becoming an adult, you decided at some point that ideally speaking, you would like to have a home birth. And as someone who had never even considered that idea or didn't even know really what it was outside of, like, you know, maybe a meme or something, I had no real clue at all, like, what you were getting us into or what, you know, what was the whole process or what, you know. So I just want people to know that when I speak from like zero understanding and zero knowledge when I first started, because this was kind of part of your vision that you brought into the fold for our family. And it wasn't necessarily something that I had was clued in on. It's not like when I was 15 years old, I was sitting in my, you know, class in high school thinking, you know what, when I have a wife and kids, I'm going to do a home birth. You know, like, I'm not having these thoughts. I'm sure most guys are not. And, you know, this podcast specifically will probably be, this episode will probably be a little bit more home birth driven because that's kind of what we did. Although a lot of these ideas and thoughts are applicable, you know, whether you're at home or in the hospital. So I'd like to start with just identifying that the home birth part of this came from you, but I also believe that it is a two-way street, right? So I think that if the, you know, let's just say the wife or the partner, the female in this character or in this scenario that's having the child, they kind of, at least in my opinion, I think that they've reserved the right to have a little bit more say. Mainly because they're the one that are pregnant. So, and that's kind of like the initiative I took when you got pregnant. I was like, okay, I'm going to let her steer the boat because I've never been a ship captain. And, you know, I'm at least going to adhere to the start of this process from you and to what your suggestions look like. So I say all that because, again, walking in totally blind. What I did after finding out that you wanted to do a home birth is, like anybody else, I started asking around. I started doing a little bit of my own research and figuring out, like, you know, besides what you're telling me, what the steps really look like for that process, how that all comes together, what potentially my role might look like in that situation, and just kind of trying to figure out, like, is this safe to do? How come other people aren't doing it as often as we are, or you're suggesting, or like, where does this start and all this stuff? And basically, I want to say this at the beginning of this episode. When I did the research that I did, because I like history in general, so I'm doing my own research as it is, I found out some startling information. Most notably that hospital births are only like 150 years old, like even less than that from like a functionality of a faculty standpoint. That kind of blew my mind. I feel like that is one of the biggest part of this equation that rarely gets discussed, is that the fact that we as humans have been delivering babies at home forever.
All the time.
And I don't think that idea never came to my mind when you mentioned this. And then as I did more research, I was like, well, shoot, what are they doing? What are they doing? Roman days or the Greeks or these other, you know, the Egyptians or these other groups, like ever, forever. What do they do? And what I found out was they weren't going to hospitals having births, you know, like doing the hospital game. It just wasn't a thing until now. And most people would be like, well, yeah, obviously now we have all these amenities and we have these resources. Why would you not want to do that? And in my thought was like, well, if we've done it this other way for thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years, why would we do it a different way? You know, we've had a lot of success, a lot of experience, a lot of exposure. What I realized, and this is the same thing that we talked about kind of in the last episode, is that like the transfer of knowledge did not make it. Everybody used to know how to give birth. Everybody understood the process back in the day. And then what I feel happened is that as the institution, that is the medical system, began to play its role with birth, we lost some of that knowledge. And as the generations have gone by, that knowledge has dwindled and dwindled to the point where you know, it's almost seen a bit rare to have a home birth or to understand the, you know, the aspect of giving birth and all the various scenarios that take place within it. That's why I think 1%. Let me finish one thing. That's why I think your program is super valuable, because a lot of the information that people are provided in your course and in several others, they just don't get in society. It's not common knowledge anymore. It's like, you got to research it. You got to find it. You got to find good information because there's a ton of information out there, but you got to search to find good information by thoughtful, experienced people, because this stuff just isn't taught anymore. And I would love to hear your insight on that, because that's a lot of what you do off like day to day. And I think it's extremely powerful and extremely important. And that's why I support you as much as I do in this effort, because it's been lost. And it's people like you and Dr. Leah and other practitioners and other folks, some of our peers, that are bringing it back to the fold and allowing people to see, like, here's how it goes. This is what it looks like step by step. And a lot of this information is feeding back into the mind. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, no, I think that that's awesome. And thank you so much for saying it. It's what I was starting to say earlier was just that it's 1% of Americans give birth at home right now. Wow. And 99% of Americans are giving birth in the hospital. Actually, there's probably some percentage of that is also like birth centers. Or maybe that 1% is all of out of hospital birth, which would include home and birth center. I'm not exactly sure. I could look that up. It doesn't really matter. My point is that it's a very small amount. And yeah, so people would say, well, no, you know, we have this technology now and it's safe from people used to die during birth. Yes, for sure they did. And the technology is good, but we've swung. It's like we had all this, you know, midwife attended birth, or women attended birth throughout all of history. I don't believe that we evolved or adapted doing it all by ourselves. I think that we always had other women and knowledgeable, you know, elders that had experience with this around us. And I think that there's a lot of evidence for that too. Potentially in certain situations, it wasn't that way. Maybe it was more individual, but humans are such communal beings. It wouldn't really make sense for us to just be like, no, I'm going off by my complete own self. Like, no, it's nice to have some support, you know? So anyway, then we swung into this like, oh my God, but we know how to, we have all this technology now and all this medical knowledge and we can play God kind of. And so we swung into the era where women, as was completely standard of care, were put out basically, drugged. And then their babies were pulled from their bodies with forceps. That was the way that birth was in the 40s and 50s. And, you know, and that was like seen as the best way to do it. And it's like, that just shows how much we leaned into the technology and the medical system a little bit too far. Now, obviously we're coming back to center a bit with this, but it's just like home birth, I think for whatever reason, gets such a bad rap that people are being irresponsible. And it's not for everyone. It's not. And if you're a low risk, healthy person, though, it could be for you. And I was 25 and extremely healthy. And with all the other ones too, I've gotten older, obviously, but I have not had any complication that would risk me out of it. And I would never put our baby at risk for this. It is something that I believe in deeply, though, that birth is a normal physiological event until it isn't. I am not going to try to say that nothing ever happens during birth, because it does. And thank goodness for the hospitals in those systems, in those situations. But I do think that there is something that a lot of people, Americans specifically, don't want to admit, which is that the hospital causes problems. And so then the hospital is there to fix the problems that they cause. And that is a really hard concept for people to understand. They just don't want to see it. They don't want to like look behind that veil and go, oh my God, what if that's true? If that's true, then my whole mindset is blown up and this paradigm shift, they just kind of don't want to see it. And yes, home birth midwives can also sabotage birth and they can also cause problems. It's not immune. It is a much smaller niche situation. And I think that it puts a lot more responsibility in the hands of the couple, specifically the woman, to do a lot of work around how she's going to manage everything, because there's not going to be the, you know, medical pain management of an epidural. So she's going to be moving. She's going to be working with her body. But what happens when we move and we work with our body? Our babies have a easier time navigating the pelvis and coming down. And we stay in this really heady endorphin space. And if the partner, someone like you, is really involved and has done their research and it feels comfortable too, like, I don't know if you ever felt that uncomfortable. To me, I mean, this is a while ago, right? Like our son is almost 9, but to me, you seemed so all in. Like you were, you already, I mean, this is why we got along immediately when we started dating, but like you have a very strong naturalistic point of view and view of life in the world anyway. And I feel like I want to know your opinion on this, but like, it didn't seem that it was that big of a jump, or maybe you kept your thoughts internal, but I never felt like I was convincing you of anything. I felt like I presented the information to you, like, I want to have a home birth. And you were just like, hell yeah. For it. But do you remember that? What was it like for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think that part of the scenario that you're describing here is after I did a modest amount of research and discovered the facts of what I just said to you just moments ago, where it's like, we've been doing home births for forever really, until just recently, I was in. I was like, well, of course. Well, like, I was just thinking to myself, like, of course, you know, like these people, there weren't hospitals all over on every corner and every street block like there are now back in like, you know, 67 AD. You know, like, what are we talking about here? So it was like, for me, after that quick jump over the fence there, for me to understand like what that really meant, I was like, oh, we've been doing this forever. We should have no problem with this. And that's how we took it. It wasn't really until later that the real true crux of the understanding that a lot of people have lost this art really kind of, dumbfounded on me, that I was like, oh my gosh, like most people don't know any of this stuff. And when I say stuff, I mean really the planning of the experience. And you mentioned that, you know, the last couple sentences you said before I started talking here, you said, you know, a lot, this isn't for everybody. You got to have your ducks in a row. You got to know what you're doing for different situations and how you want to manage stuff, different scenarios that may present themselves. And I would say that's the biggest piece. Certainly for the person giving birth, but then also for the partner. Me in this case, knowing, hey, when the pain ratchets it up to a level 10, be prepared to know that, you know, your partner's entering a space they probably haven't been before, pain wise, experience wise, everything. So you have to almost kind of just, for me, it was like showing a little bit of faith in the process, A, B, showing faith in my partner that she can do it, and C, being that foundational footing that it's like, hey, no matter what happens, I got you, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a level of confidence that's gained certainly by you in this situation where it's just like, oh, Wes is solid as a rock in this. Like, that makes me feel so assured.
100%.
And when you're going into a place, yeah, and you're going into a place that you haven't been, having assurance is a great friend, you know?
Did you ever feel, well, okay, first of all, I just want to say that we took the most amazing hypnobirthing class in San Diego, which you can take online at any point with Kara Messer, who both of us are just like the biggest fans of for so many different reasons.
I love Kara Messer. The hypnobirthing class she provides is world class.
It really is. It's next level. And I'll put that in the show notes too, because you can take it online now. She still is the one that's like leading it live. But you can live anywhere and take it, which is fantastic, because it was so, I mean, I feel like I remember almost every class. It was connecting for you and me. It got us on the same page. We learned a shitload. It was hilarious. We made friends like Tim and Mallory, you know, who we're still friends with. It was really fantastic. And I think it was also normalizing for both of us to hear from somebody who's so experienced as a doula and birth educator, how normal home birth is and how supportive she was that we can do this and all these different things. And it just, I think that was a huge piece of it. I, you know, you and I were both also doing our own birth research, but that one, that was such a big deal for me.
It was a real nice download, because again, you're coming in, you know, very little. I mean, in this case, both of us had no experience with childbirth. That class put things on the map for us. It gave us a guide, you know, it gave us like, and that's what I'm saying. You want to, regardless hospital or at home, you want to know where you're going. You know, you want to know where you're headed and what the challenges you may face look like, so that you're ready to like face those challenges. And I think that birth itself provides a lot of challenges, and that's what makes it dynamic. That's what makes it incredible. That makes it amazing. And that's also what makes it challenging. Because it is exactly that. Like, if it was easy, everybody would do it, right?
And even if you're planning on going to the hospital, I always feel like I must say this because I hear about it all the time. Even if you're planning on going to the hospital and getting an epidural, your baby may have a different plan, and your baby may be born in the car, or you can't get the epidural for some reason. And if you have absolutely zero practice or forethought or conversation about how you're going to work through contractions and have pain management, you might be in for like a world of hurt and sort of trauma because you're surprised by it. But if you're not surprised by it, you feel like you have a lot of tools in your tool bag, you're ready for anything, even if everything goes to plan, you know, it's great. But so I wanted to get your perspective on the birth itself. I mean, it was long, or it did happen at home. Everything was fine. He was fine. I was fine. But it drug on and on and on. And you, I know at the very, very end, maybe seemed to be a little bit nervous, but I never felt like your anxiety never rubbed off on me, but I just want to know from your own honest, transparent thoughts, like what was that like for you as a first-time dad?
First time pregnancies, as I'm sure people have said on this podcast 1,000 times, they tend to go a little bit longer just for obvious reasons. In my mind, I thought that meant, you know, a couple hours. I didn't understand that it was going to be another day or two, you know? And if you're not, again, if you're not ready for that, when you hit day 2.5, you start, you know, your mind starts playing tricks on you and you're not as fluid as you were, and you're obviously fatigued. And then I started thinking about you, and I was like, oh my gosh, my partner has been dealing with agony and levels of pain she's never experienced this whole time. And I was like feeling really worn out on day 2.5. And just for people to know, it was like a 3-day deal. I was like, holy cow, I can't even imagine how you would feel in that moment. So that like kind of spurred me, gave me a little bit more energy and an endorphin rush, to be honest with you, to like really re-engage and just making sure you were good. Because the level of fatigue was serious. And again, this goes into like having bags of tricks in your bags and all these various planning components. Like it's a process, and it's not something, unless you're checking all the boxes, that there's going to be something that slips in there that maybe you weren't ready for. So it's about having awareness too, as well, you know, like about the whole process and about, as a partner, for me specifically, what can I do to help, to provide some emotional reassurance, to provide some stability in the process. I get a lot of questions from various dads about, okay, my wife, you know, we're going into the hospital. What should I do? What should I do for her in there? And it's a really hard place for a guy to be, because just, I mentioned this in the last podcast we had, this is a new space for us. This is a new place for the dad to be. Obviously the hospital story we kind of talked about, it's a different place, and we were never included in the storyline before, you know, let's say a couple of decades ago. So even now, you know, you got your doulas who are trained and know what they're doing. You have a hospital personnel staff, you've got midwives if you're at home, you got all these people that are technically lending a hand in the process. So to you, it's kind of like, I've literally heard dad say like, well, everybody else was doing anything, so I didn't do anything. And it's just like, I mean, you can let everybody do everything, and that's certainly allowed and okay, I suppose. But like, I want to engage people and encourage them to remember, like, this is your wife, this is your partner, this is your baby. And if I'm you, I'm doing everything possible to make this go as easily and fluid and have some fluidity to the movements and the process, and do everything I can to make it better for you. Real life example, food, water, petting, heavy petting around the ears, around the back of the neck, washcloths, you know, like there's a lot of different things, and you'll learn these at the hypno classes and different things, but there's a lot of different things. There's massaging, there's swaying, there's movements, there's things that you can do with your partner to kind of help at various points in the process. So like all of these little things you gotta know, and then also like when to use them. Cause it's not like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to stand her up and start swaying with her and stuff like that. It's like, no, no, no. Like, you got to pick your spots for some of this.
So do you feel like, cause I mean, with the first birth, I basically could not take any of the contractions by myself. Like I really, really needed so much hands-on support, and it helped me so much. It was like, I didn't feel scared, but I just think I felt really overwhelmed when I was by myself. And when you were often I have lots of memories of like holding your hands really and squeezing and like being forehead to forehead with you, or squeezing my hips, or I was like hanging off of your neck. I mean, we did a gajillion over those couple of days. We did a million different poses, but you basically were with me every single one and almost never left my side. And if you did, someone else stepped in. Like if you had to pee or eat, I don't even know if you did that, but that is one thing that dads kind of, or partners, whoever they are, sometimes forget about, is like they literally won't eat or drink or pee themselves. And you do need to do that, because you have to, as a main support person, you got to also take care of yourself. But find somebody who can slip in and take your place if she is needing a lot of that kind of attention. Did you feel like, holy shit, like I do remember, I think the next day you were sore from me hanging on your body. Do you remember that?
I do a little bit, not a ton, but I do recall just being fatigued and my body, because again, I'm fairly tall and just bending over for hours and hours at a time and my back, and then just like just the strength. So, several times I was like literally holding you up in various situations and various, you know, movements and stuff. And yeah, it gets tiring. It's tough. But in my, again, going back, I kept thinking about the level of pain you were experiencing. So in my mind, I was just like, yeah, I got a little twinge in my back. I'll deal, you know?
Oh, that's sweet.
But it's also by the fourth birth, I would say I felt like the quarterback of the team, where I knew what was coming, where I was, as they say in sports, I was reading the defense. I knew, you know, we're going to need this in about 5 minutes. I knew we're going to, you know, need, you know, at a certain point in our last birth, I told the midwife, I was like, hey, Janice, I think you need to step up here and do X, Y, and Z. And she's like, okay. And even though she could have done that on her own, or she could have done it, like, it felt like she was allowing me or us in this scenario to own the process as much as we wanted to. And then she said, you know, I came to her and was like, hey, I think if you get in there and do a couple things, that this baby's going to pop right back out. And it was because I was in flow with the situation. I knew what to expect, and all that comes with experience. But it was also kind of like, I wanted to own that whole process. I mean, I joked around about having an unassisted birth before that, but it was like, I gained so much pride in a home birth setting, because it was like, it was us, you know, and we did this and we had this baby. And that's where a lot of the emotional pride and just the overall excitement for home birth in general, for me at least, like, I don't see it any other way at this point, because we've done it as many times as we have. And I wouldn't change my mind once. I would do home birth every time. But again, the first time, it's a challenge. It's a little nerve wracking, because again, you don't know any of the steps or any of the process or the possibilities. So you're going to have to like really be prepared.
It's like, okay, it's like this. The education is so important, because people are like, well, then why would you ever do that? Because, or do the education part? Because if you still, when you feel like it's actually happening, you feel like you don't know what's going on, then like, how does it even help? This is what it would be like, you guys. It's like, you've never heard of football before, ever. Or no, you've heard of football, but you've never played. And so you go and you take a class, and it explains to you like the rules of the game, and here's some tactics and some strategy, and this is what's going to happen. This is how you score a point, et cetera, whatever. And because you know you're going to be thrown into an NFL game in a couple weeks. And it's like, if you didn't have that education, yeah, you can like navigate it and stuff a little bit, but it will be so much more intense. But you still can never quite completely prepare for being thrown into the NFL game. Like, because when you're living it and you're actually doing it, it's still always going to be new. And then the second time you play an NFL game, you're like, oh, okay. The third and the fourth, and I mean, however many kids you have, it obviously gets easier and easier. So it's like, it just is that way for everybody. The birthing woman, like the first, you know, it's the first time she's ever had a baby. The partner, it's the first time they've probably ever witnessed birth before, unless they're another woman who has also given birth before or attended births. But that is not, you know, like the situation for everybody. So it's like, no matter what happens, this is a new, and we just need to be as like kind of into it and supportive. I have one question for you, because I get asked this all the time. What would you say to the couple of, I get specifically asked this, a woman wants to have a home birth and her husband is scared and doesn't want to do it. What would you, I mean, I don't know. I know you said a lot already.
No, it's funny you say that, because I get the same question often.
Okay.
I would say, for me, my initial thought when you brought this up for a first kid, I remember thinking like, this is weird. What are we like? I wasn't completely, and I brought it up to my mom, and she's like, she wants to have the baby at home. Are you sure? You know, and I'm sure what that mother's going to be saying to that guy too, you know, like whoever's on the other end of that conversation in real life, they're going to go to their mom and be, or their sister, and they're going to say, so Alice wants to have a home birth, you know, and they're going to be like, really? You know, like, are you sure?
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Stress management can come from multiple different angles, including exercise, proper diet, and restful sleep. But did you know you can also support your stress response using herbs like ashwagandha, shatavari, rhodiola, milky oats, and holy basil? These adaptogenic herbs are the ones found in Needed's stress support product, which has become one of my absolute favorite supplements I take. It's safe to take while trying to conceive and while nursing, and at any point in your motherhood besides during your pregnancy. These herbs are commonly used in traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine to support cortisol's response to daily life and to promote restful sleep. Go to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 20% off. Again, go to thisisneeded.com and save 20% with the code HEALTHYMOTHER.
Okay, back to the show.
And what I would say is two things. Number one, find out where your nearest hospital is. And then the other stat that I kept seeing all the time is, even if you're in the hospital and something goes awry, the amount of time that it takes to do these various steps and then get that person into, let's say, an emergency room type situation for a surgery, in the worst case scenario, it was about the same amount of time it took you to drive and pull yourself into the ER. Literally, I looked up a whole bunch of different stats, because when you're in the hospital, you got to check every box. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to get approvals. You got to get, you know, all the different things that go with it. When you're at home and things go right, you just drive yourself right to the emergency room. And so,
You're getting taken by ambulance, yeah,
or an ambulance, sure. And to me, I was like, you know what? If I can get professional medical personnel at my house, now the fire department's 2.5 miles here. Let's say it's 6 minutes. They can then transport the baby, which is 3 miles away from my house, or 4 miles to the hospital. Let's say that's maybe 15 minutes. And we can get that baby to the hospital, or to that mom to the hospital. I was like, I don't know how much faster they're doing it in-house, you know, like, because I'm sure that there's boxes that have to get checked. I'm sure that somebody's got to get screened, or they got to get approval, or this or that, or whatever. I know some of that because I've seen it. It may be a minute or two faster, but it's not like light years faster. And I think that's a big thing that people need to understand, at least in my knowledge. It could be a little quicker. I'm sure that it is, because you're on site, but in the same breath, it's not going to be catastrophic if it goes the other way and you need to just get an ambulance to drive you there.
It's similar. And midwives at home are not going to wait to that point.
Right.
Before they would transfer anyway. And that usually when a baby is crashing and we need an emergency C-section is because they're not handling Pitocin well. Babies don't tend to crash in that sort of a speed at home. They're being monitored. It's, you know, natural endogenous contractions. Obviously things happen, and there are deaths at home too. There are cord accidents. There are stillbirths that were predicted for. There are complications that can happen. Of course, I'm not trying to say that that never happens. It is a lot rarer. But that might also just be accounted for by the population who's choosing to birth at home is then lower risk and all these different things. It's hard to tease out all those factors. But my point is, it's just that a home birth midwife is not going to wait to the nth degree point where they're like, holy shit, now they're calling somebody, you know?
Yeah, let me just say that. I'm going to jump on that. That's a huge piece of the equation. They're not waiting for the last second. You're going to be way ahead of that, like a day ahead of that. At the home setting, they're like, things aren't looking great. You know, like, let's, because they'd rather like phase you out in an emergency care anyway. So they're like, you know what, let's just be precautions. They're not like egomaniacs, these midwives. They can say, okay, you know what, this one doesn't look like so super normal, or this is the patterns here are off. Like, let's err on the side of caution and we'll just have you go in. I've seen that happen many times. And most of the time the baby's born just totally normal at the hospital, and that's fine. Great. Yep. It's not a competition. I think my ultimate goal, you know, when you said I want to have home birth, my ultimate goal is like, I just want a healthy kid.
Right.
You know, I just want my baby to be healthy and good and ready to go. And that's what we got. I would also say the second piece of it was just the research that I did into like historical birthing, which I found to be all at home or in a tribe setting where there were a slew of people who had tons of experience that didn't have any type of an agenda or additional meds or anything like that that would offset the timeline, which I feel like is what happens, you know, a lot of times in facilities. The timeline isn't matching kind of what they thought. And they're like, okay, well, we can do this or we can do that. We can speed it up by doing X. And it's just like, 1,000 years ago, they weren't speeding it up by doing X. You know, they weren't doing these measures right that we do now to kind of like manipulate the timeline. And I think that, you know, people get you can have totally normal babies in that environment too, where you, you know, timeline gets manipulated or this or that, and that's, it's totally fine. But in the same breath, you can have totally normal babies when you don't do that, you know?
Right.
And if, and most of the time just, and I don't, I'm going to run a risk by saying something right here, but I'm going to do it. I honestly believe that because our society has been groomed on purpose and grown to be so limited on attention span, I think that plays a role in birth. I think people are so used to things happening organically, naturally, and quickly that they want it to be that way. And then at home, you run the risk of it taking longer. You may run the risk of, but I can go to the hospital and, you know, if it just move things along, and they don't, I'm not sure people even know that that's part of the equation, but like they know that they can get meds there. They can get something that help contractions. They can get various tools and access to tools that you don't have at home. And I think that that fits with the way society's going in a way.
I see what you're saying. And I do think that it is a component. It's like, we want convenience. We want predictability and ease and simplicity. And it's like, sometimes that can be achieved when we are manipulating the factors, like you mentioned. It also, though, is presented, unfortunately, as if there are no risks to those types of interventions. And that's just not the truth, right? We're seeing that now with our 30%, almost over 30%, something like that, cesarean rate in this country. And it's like,
which compared to other countries is insanely high.
Yeah. And we have one of the worst maternal morbidities in the world, the United States does. We're just meddling a little bit too much. Obviously, there's a time and place for cesarean. There's a time and place for induction. There really is. There really, really, really is. I know there's going to be some people who don't think there is a single time and place for either of those things, and I don't agree. And I think that it's great that we have it. It's just, it's been hard for modern humans to find this balance of allowing natural physiological birth to take place and fitting that in with hospital schedules. Rooms are taken up. There's doctors and shifts are changing out. And then there's holidays. You know, there's all these stats around, like, the lowest birth day in the country is Christmas Eve and Christmas, because they're not hanging around to do inductions on those days. And if a baby is, it's, you know, December 23rd or whatever, oh, it's been like nine, you know, maybe we should just do a cesarean. There's also statistics around one other particular day of the year. I forget what it is, but it's like so many babies are born like in this cluster because of personal reasons for the staff wanting to like not be there. And I get it, but we have to just remember all these factors and say, okay, can we see some overall arching trends that we used to come from this place of doing this all the time? Yes, there were problems. That happened. And now we can get to a place with our balance of knowing how the body works and physiology and being humans, being mammals designed to birth vaginally, and having this cool, awesome medical technology of backup safety systems. How can we smartly use both systems so that women have the benefit of the physiological birth where possible, and then when we need to, truly need to, not because of hospital policy or insurance models or schedules or things taking too long, where we can use those interventions, you know? And it's just like, we haven't found that middle Goldilocks ground yet. And so this is why couples like ourselves choose to birth outside of that system, to give ourselves the best chance. Because I really believe if Gage had been born in a hospital, I would have had a cesarean, no doubt about it. He was fine. I was fine. It was just taking too damn long. And my contractions were not on the normal pattern. I was dilating very slow. I stalled out at 9 centimeters. It was just like, they would have given me some Pitocin. They would have broken my water. Something would have happened, you know? And I think mentally, had I been there too, I would have maybe lost that. I was teetering on, I had almost no more confidence left in this whole process at the very end. I was just like, the level of fatigue.
I think the exhaustion level. And I think that that's where a lot of mothers go. It's just like, I've reached a point where I didn't think I could go any further.
Yes.
And I've heard many people say that exact line where it's like, I got to this point in the process and I just couldn't do it anymore. And to me, I always think, you can, you know, like, you're built for this, mom. You like, you can do it, you know, like, and of course there's various situations and various settings and different things happen for different people, and it is what it is. But to your point, even when we were with Gage on that, you know, on the third day, and it was like the eighth hour, and I was just like exhausted. I was like, it was still not a thing in my mind where I was like, oh, we got to go. We got to transfer you out of here, because it was so dangerous. It was more of just like, and this goes back to my last comment. It's like, we're used to things happening very fast. And when they take longer than you think they should, and then people start getting concerned, and all these various, you know, questionable situations start arising, and you're like, well, this, if this doesn't happen by this time, and then we got to worry about X. And it's just like, let's just calm down, let the body do its thing. I think that's one of my biggest things for a guy to hear, is that the body is amazing, especially the female body. It is absolutely priceless. And it does things that you can never imagine. And that's what I think out of all these births, my biggest takeaway is that your body is just like on another level. For it to be able to do what it does on the front end, build the baby, hatch the baby, and then provide the food and the nutrients needed to keep that baby moving. And not only do humans do this, all animals do this. It's just incredible. And I think when you start leveling all those out, you see one thing comes clear to me. You get pregnant, then you know, that's a whole year process, basically. It's 9 months. Then you have the baby, which it's, again, we're talking about that right now. That's its own deal. And then you're postpartum, where you're feeding your baby the only food that it can eat. And on top of that, you are also recovering from that process that I just outlined, which was almost a year long for you. And that's where I think, you know, on the postpartum side, not to jump to postpartum, but
no, let's do it.
That's where I think the guy really shows his worth, proves his worth as a partner, because that's where we can get involved and do all the things. And so we can rattle through some questions here, but I feel like that's where I came into play. And that's where I felt like I provided the best level of value to you and to our family. Mm-hmm. Was after that baby was arrived, it was go time for me. You had done all the things for the last year and missed out on things and went through all that experience, and then, you know, put yourself through heck to get to a point where you had the baby. And now it's like, you're still taking care of the baby and now yourself. Mm-hmm. How can I get involved?
Yeah. So somebody had asked the question, would love to hear his perspective on preparing first-time dads for the postpartum period. Okay. And then somebody similar is, you know, how do we, you and I, handle those early postpartum days with a new baby? Another one is somebody wanted to know your perspective on division of labor, like in the household, you know, like who's doing what kind of a thing.
Sure.
So, yeah me, like kind of just your thoughts on all that.
Okay. After this last baby, I wrote down notes almost every day for 10 days, just because I wanted them for my own notes. And I'm going to read through a couple of things that I jotted down that I felt like I could have played a role in, or just things to have prepared. I think if, you know, home or hospital, when you come home with that, when that baby's at home and it's back on you, I'll never forget when you had Gage, finally everybody got cleaned up and left the house. I remember thinking to myself, when is the next time that we can go on a vacation together? You and me. That's what, like, the first thing. And then it dawned on me, because I was exhausted. It was like 3 days in. I was like, it dawns on me. I'm like, oh, we're not going on a vacation together. Like, we've got this baby. Like, there's no escaping this fatigue. That's what I, you know, because that's what I was thinking. I was like, how can I like make my wife not feel so tired? How can I feel not so tired? You're gonna be tired. Come in ready to be fatigued, and that know that you're gonna have to do all the stuff I'm gonna talk about. Fatigued, you know, like as the partner in this, like you're going to have to do some stuff. Here's a small list of things that I would have prepared or have talked about in advance. And this is just a small list: nipple treatment, cranial sacral care, vaginal care, treatment for the mom to, like, you know, have somebody come in. And I would have these, and this is the one thing, the biggest thing, and this is a two person job. This isn't just the partner. This is the wife and the husband, or the boyfriend and girlfriend, whoever it is. This is both partners. Have all these things ready to go. You do not want to be looking for a contact on the internet to do X, Y, or Z in the moment. You want to know who you're calling. You want to know the resources that you're going to use and who they are. So, and in most cases, get them in advance. But a lot of people don't do this. I mean, you get calls from friends and family and other patients and stuff in an absolute panic. 2 days postpartum, 4 days postpartum, because they hadn't considered X. And now they're like, who do I call for this? What do I do? What do I do?
Okay. And really quick, let me just list that off. I talk about this all the time. You need to have your lactation consultant identified, your IBCLC. So it's called International Board Certified Lactation Consultant. I think it would also be a really good idea to have a meal train set up, like mealtrain.com, with friends and family. If nobody lives close to you, they can still donate money that you can use for meal delivery or grocery delivery. I think you also ought to just have either a chiropractor or a massage therapist, ideally both, that could come to your house. If you don't use them, fine, whatever, but do a little bit of the research. You have to call and ask, hey, do you do home visits? Does it charge extra? Which days of the day of the week are you working? Because if you find yourself in a lot of body pain and you would really benefit from something like that, or is there some kind of a postpartum doula that can come and do a belly binding service on you and a massage therapist? Like here in town in the Treasure Valley, there's Megan Doyle, who's amazing. And I'll put her information in the show notes too, who can come and do several different things. And so whether or not you're going to use these people, fine, whatever. But it takes maybe an hour to start to do this process. And it seems like, oh yeah, I'll do that when the baby's born. No, you won't. You just won't. You'll just suffer. So figure it out beforehand. So yeah, I'm glad that you have that. Yeah,
chiropractic. I mean, your body, your bones are being moved in this process. So it's like chiropractic care, IVs, potentially even just to replenish your nutrients, a sleep plan for the two of you, like who's managing the baby at what time and how are you, like having all of the things that you might need for that baby. Tongue tie, potentially, medical care that the baby might need. The baby might need medical care. You in a variety of fashion. I mentioned cranial sacral. It might not be your classic MD that you need to see. It might be somebody else that's a trained practitioner that works on babies all the time. And, I think cranial sacral for a baby is absolutely imperative. Imperative.
Yeah.
And that rarely discussed, but like, the day that a mom feels the day of a birth, the day after a birth, compared to that third day, is a whole different person. Like there's a lot of endorphins and just energy that's moving through your aura and through your body when you have a baby, and it takes away a lot of the pain and a lot of the fatigue and a lot of the trauma that your body just went through. It just makes it go away. It's magic. But day three comes. And you're like, oh no. Like, I have a note from here that says, day four, mom is super fatigued. Quote, every cell in my body is tired. That's what you said.
Aww.
And so it was just like the pain, the fatigue, all the stress, everything is starting to set in. And, the endorphins are flushing out, the hormones are shifting a bit, and it's kind of that high that you were on is starting to walk away, which is fine. It came there to do its job. And then after the baby's here, it's going to ease itself out of your space, but you got to be ready. You got to be ready. And your partner's got to be ready to be like, holy cow, my wife seemed great after giving birth. I've seen a million pictures of this, and friends be like, oh yeah, Allison's doing fantastic. And she's just, look at these photos we got of the baby. It's like, she's going to go for a walk or whatever. It's just like, whoa. And then I talked to him again, two, 3 days later, like, oh, she hasn't left the bed. She's super tired. So be ready for that person to not leave the bed. Like that's a huge piece. And you instruct a lot of moms to hunker down. This is the time in your life to lay in a bed for 10 days and don't move, and I'm a bit facetious in this, but like the idea here is to let your body recuperate after such a trauma. And most people get right to it and getting back to their regular patterns and their, I got up and just got a cup of coffee in day five or whatever it is. It's like, or I went to Starbucks and it's just like, whoa.
Okay. Really, well, and I would say, one thing too that a lot of people I hear is that they're like, I would love to sit and be in the bed for 10 days, 2 weeks, something, but maybe if their husbands have to go to, back to work, then obviously that's one thing. But if they their husbands don't have to go back to work, how can husbands prepare for all of the things that they have to do? Because you are really good at this. You were good at the first time. Obviously, it's gotten better and better as we've learned together too, and just clearly setting up those expectations. I mean, I know that you knew by the time that it was going to be my fourth postpartum, but I remember specifically too, during the pregnancy with Sunday, talking about it being like, just so we're clear, I am not going to do anything for 2 weeks. Like, I'm not doing the dishes. I'm not doing the laundry. I am going to make myself, because I did that with our after our second baby. And then I didn't do it after our third baby because I got a little cocky. I thought I understood what was happening. I thought like I felt good. I kind of did that thing that you're talking about. And I was helping, but also because of the age gaps of our kids at that time, I felt I really wanted to be more involved with Savi. She wasn't even 2 years old yet. You know, it was really hard for me to stay in bed, and I paid for that later, and it really sucked. And then to come off of with a baby too that like never slept, our third never slept. And so that was really, really hard on me. So I was like, hey, we have three other kids. It's so much work for him. But if we can manage this where you really know and I really know and I am just like fully, fully healing and also expecting to have to go through all the tongue tie bullshit that we have to do, which is so much work and so much pain for me, like I'm not going to do anything. And so I really didn't. And so people, I think men need to hear this rests on your shoulders or whoever the partner is. It is going to be on you. Like you have to step up. It's a short period of time where you're managing all this stuff and it's crazy and it's chaotic. And I hope that you know that I was so, so, so grateful for all the things you were doing. Cause I remember specifically you going back and forth and back and forth, laundry, just the laundry, like walking by the room, doing so many things and cooking and then the snacks and all the kids wanting the snacks and blah, blah, blah. And I would just like, maybe if I came out into the kitchen for a hot second looking around and like the house was just in like disarray. Cause it's like, how do you manage it? Because you were bringing me food 4 times a day. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of women want their men to do what you did. And it's not something that they know about or even think is like a real thing. But can you just tell them that it's a real thing?
It's a real thing. And it's also like one of the things I'm most prideful about, because it's that time, that one or two, three, four times in your life where your partner like needs you.
Yes.
And I would say it will be remembered how you play this game. I'm not saying that aggressively, but just like your wife knows if you're giving a half-ass effort and she's just done all this for a year and then went through pregnancy and birth itself. And now it's day three and you're kind of like kicking your feet up like, I got 3 weeks off. Like I'm going to get on my phone and horse around and my wife's trying to tell me to make a meal for her or whatever. It's like, no, dude, like help them get their body right first couple of days after the baby's born. Like what? And that's, again, that's the chiropractic care, the wraps, the this, the that, like know what you want, almost kind of having a day by day schedule. And it'll just based on where your wife or your partner is on this process, but you want to be engaged here. And it starts with, feeding them so much food. Like even if they don't want it, give them four meals. I used to joke about fifth meal at like 10:30 at night, like, feed them. The train meal is great for that. And utilize that. And then, but yes, you be prepared to be completely in this role. And then what I did is I almost like enjoyed it because it was like something I never did, you know, like I'm not here every day doing all of the laundry, doing all the meals and cleaning everything and then taking care of my wife and then doing all the, that's not every day. I do those things, but not every single day, all day. But in this case, like, and I did it and I committed to it and I was up at 6 and I went to bed at, 11 o'clock and I was running that whole time. And I wasn't sitting on there checking my phone. I wasn't horsing around. I was making sure that my wife felt good. And when that baby would go to sleep, because you got to remember, babies go to sleep a lot. I would go in there. I'd give her a little massage. A lot of times she had achy legs. I would massage her legs. I would just do all the things that you can. And, pet her. Heavy petting is nice. Just pet her neck, pet her head. I'm joking, but it's just like, imagine if you were in that situation. You were just like laying down. I'm saying this to guys. You're laying down on the bed. Your body just went through the most horrific, most challenging painful experience that you've ever experienced. What do you want somebody to do? It's like, you want somebody to take care of you, you know? Mm-hmm. So just have that emotional understanding in your mind and in your heart, and go in there and do it and be happy about it. You're only doing this
like a smile.
Once, twice, three times, four, you know, like not that many times. This is like 1 week. This is 2-3 weeks of your whole life. If you have three kids, you know, like you can knuckle down and make that work for your family. One thing I wanted to say is like, and this is to the ladies out there, when you're having these kids, you got to knuckle down and stay in bed. Cause as you said, they all want to get up and go. And I have notes on here. May have overdid it yesterday. Blood was bleeding a brighter red, meaning that your discharge that was coming was a different shade because you'd overdone it. And I've heard women, you and others, you know, they get mastitis because they just wanted to go and get out of the house. And it was day 7. And they thought that they could just go to, you know, have a dinner or a lunch with a friend or whatever. And it's like, nope. Lock it down.
Yeah. And some people argue with me about this because they're like, I didn't feel like that. I felt great. And I did blah, blah, blah. Okay. Well, just know that I think that those situations are truly so rare. I really, really want everyone to have the expectation set that you're not going to want to do that. You're going to feel bad. Or you're just going to say, yeah, I can understand that my brain wants to go to the beach right now, or my brain is feeling stir crazy. And instead, I'm going to like listen to an audiobook or a podcast or read a book or stare at my young newborn baby that I will never get these days back with, or whatever. Talk to a friend, have a friend come over and sit with you on the edge of the bed or something if you want to. But it is so common, you guys, doing this work where the really energetic moms go out, maybe they're 10 days postpartum and they get mastitis. I cannot tell you. Maybe they're 3 weeks, but they're at 3 weeks, you're still not supposed to be going to parties and stuff. Like, you're not supposed to be hosting things. You're not supposed to be going out and doing a bunch of stuff. Like, you can't do that yet. Like, you can slowly integrate your way back into normal society and living with lots of rest and break. And if you don't, your body will tell you. So your vaginal bleeding will change. It will become more bright red or more pronounced, like more of it. Or yeah, you might have a clogged duct or breast or mastitis, or you'll just tank out. Like, a lot of women who do that and they just immediately get back to their lives seem to feel good for like the first couple months. And then I see this all the time around 3 and 4 months postpartum, they completely crash and burn and they're so depleted. A lot of them tend to lose their milk supply. Maybe they're going back to work too. So the timing all adds up to this like really big kind of like worst case scenario of everything being bad, but it's really true. One thing I really just wanted to touch back on is, you and I quickly decided, well, first baby, you were up with me in the middle of the night the whole time because we had to do this triple feeding thing with him. Second, third, and fourth babies, we sleep in different areas. And I think that's a great plan. And I don't hear it enough. I think that people really need to embrace that if they can. If mom can manage the baby in the middle of the night so that the partner can get a really good night's sleep, so that they're completely able to take on that very busy day that they have ahead of them, taking care of the whole house and all the other kids, that works out great. Because honestly, what can a partner do in the middle of the night that much anyway, besides change the baby or burp them or something? It's like mom, the baby wants to be on mom. The baby wants to sleep on mom, breastfeed, diaper change takes 10 seconds. It's like, not to say that moms don't need help or shouldn't need help in the middle of the night, because I did with Gage as a first time mom. But as you become more experienced, just lean into that idea that like, you for sure got a really good night's sleep every night. You probably slept like a baby because you were so tired from all the things you were doing in the daytime. And I felt good about that. I never felt like I was left alone in the middle of the night and like I really needed you. But if I did really need you, I went and I got you, and you were always willing to help me too. But
right. I would say, unless, let me jump on top. Unless there's a circumstance that requires your input, if you're the partner in this, if you can get that sleep that she's talking about, I think that's huge. Because, you know, I'm just thinking about, the mom is going to be interrupted multiple times at night. You know, they're not going to have great sleep, right? So in my mind, I was like, okay, if I can get up with a full night of sleep and then manage all the things, and then when this baby goes, because again, babies go to sleep a lot. If this baby goes to sleep and my wife can go to sleep, that's huge. So half of what I did was like trying to set up the environments in various situations so that hey, as soon as that baby went to sleep, I got you some food. Immediately as the food was out, I took the plate. I gave you this. I got you a smoothie. I took that out. And then you went to bed.
Yep.
And then the baby would wake up and you would hang around with the baby for an hour and a half. And then the baby would sleep. And then I would say, what do you want now? Like, what do you, we're going to get for you. And it's, you know, cause the babies, it's like 3 hour chunks, you know, it's like they're on, they're off, they're on, they're off, they're on. And so it's like for me or the, any partner out there that wants to get, you know, really engaged, it's like when that baby's asleep, that's your go time to get mom anything she needs, support her in any way you can. And basically do all of the things kind of in those gaps so that she's free, you know, that she can go to sleep immediately or just lay down or whatever. And so another thing I want to bring up was visitors. I was a gatekeeper. I felt like working on a front desk somewhere. People would come over. They want to come in. They want to see. And if you know sales at all, you know, like there's usually somebody keeping you from who you want to talk to. That's you in this role. Like I would say, and this is just my own personal preference, I wouldn't let anybody want, I don't want anybody to touch, to handle my child for like at least a week. And best friend wants to come in and cousin wants to come over and mom and dad obviously have to. And then, you know, brother-in-law wants, sister-in-law, you know, all of a sudden it turns into 15 people who are handling this baby. And given the time of year, if it's the middle of the summer and there's not much going around, okay, great. But if it's January and there's cold and flu running all over the place, I would hardline stop any handling and absolutely make sure everybody's washing their hands and doing all this stuff. Have you coughed in 3 years? I don't want anything around this baby because they're, you know, their immune systems are not the strongest at that point in time. And everybody wants to see the baby. So it's like set something up so you can show them the baby without them touching and handling the baby because they all want to hold it. And there's no need to hold a 5-day-old baby. There really isn't because they weigh about, you know, 9 pounds. Maybe mom and dad, maybe your parents. But outside of that, I wouldn't be hustling anybody back into the bedroom to let them, you know, A, sit with you or B, you know, like, because we had, in the first one, we had people who came over. You had 1,000 friends. Everybody wanted to come over and hang out. And then after like a week, I was like, this is exhausting my wife.
Yeah.
Like you having to talk for 45 minutes and then people would overstay their welcome. Mm-hmm. It got to the point where like, I think you and I had code words where it's like, if I say, you know, sunshine, that means get this person out of my room. Like I got to go back to sleep or whatever.
Yeah. No, that's a big deal. It's kind of crazy. It sounds wild, but if you've felt it, you know, talking immediately postpartum can be one of the most exhausting things. It just takes energy that you simply don't have or that you need to try to like funnel back into yourself. And if that's not you and you feel great talking and you love that and something, cool, do whatever feels good to you, but just know that like you're not a crazy freak if it doesn't feel good to you. Okay, we have a few more minutes that we can do some rapid fire ones. Does that work or do you have any other last thoughts you want to say?
Let's rapid fire and get this moving.
Okay, so somebody says, I mean this with love, but is he tired? Lol.
Tired a lot. Tired all the time. I do try and pay attention to my sleep, although I'm not really great at doing that so well. But I do, and I don't take naps. It's not really my game. But I do also understand in my mind that this is a window of time. So it's like I'm going to use a terrible analogy here, but it makes sense. It's like when you're at war in some other country, right? And you're a soldier. You have to go over there. You're there. You're going to be there. You're in there for, you know, like you're in their country, you're at war, like, but it will end. So just know that for that window of time, you know, you're in that space. That's simply, you know, can't put it any other way. So yes, will I be tired? Will I be fatigued? Sure. I often compare it to your level of fatigue and it's not anywhere close. So it's like, I can bite the bullet and just keep moving the train along. Eventually I'll go to sandals in the Bahamas and have a week long vacation.
After 10 years, because we just keep running it back. Okay, somebody asked, how does dad fit it all in? Like working out, work, time with the kids, time with wife, life chores?
On the last one, I talked about spinning plates, which is an analogy I use for when you have a lot of things going on in your life. Some of them are financial, some of them are personal health, some of them are family, some of them are your wife or your partnership or your relationships, all these different things. You want all those to be spinning at the same time, right? So for me, I know when some of them are, some of those plates get a little wobbly. And like an example for me on a personal note is like my personal health hasn't been as good as it has been historically. And that's because I had four kids in 6-7 years, you know, like, and I understand that. Am I making adjustments? Yes. I think a lot of it has to do with like looking after you're in it, looking, kind of taking a moment of clarity and saying, how can I better spend my time? How can I adjust the systems that we have in place? How can I reevaluate my patterns, my own personal patterns, whether they're positive or negative? Like, you know, do I need to go out with the guys on Thursday night? No, I have a 7-month-old baby. Do I need to do that every Thursday and go and, you know, watch Thursday night football at Joey's house or whatever? It's like some of this stuff you're going to have to figure out and be like, you know what, I got to replace this with something else. And so that's all part of the growth process in this. But yes, you know, I would say the level of fatigue is real, but no, you're in the window for a short period of time.
Yeah. And then I think one thing that you and I always do too, is like we reevaluate once we're in a different milestone. Like recently in the last couple of months, we had, well, we're not anymore, but we had Nightwind, our fourth baby. And so then things were starting to kind of feel different again. Like it was like, oh, we're in this new, I was sleeping all through the night. I was waking up earlier with her because she was awake in the morning. So then you and I kind of had this like hour before the other kids were even awake to have the morning. And we were starting to talk about maybe that's when you can start to work out now because you prefer to work out in the morning. Like there's going to be things that shift and change with all your other kids that are coming along. And how do you make that work? One thing too, I wanted to note here, which I thought was really cool. We don't do this anymore. We should. But when Gage was young and I was in med school and you were working, we were living in San Diego, we would do like our nights, quote unquote. So like, let's just pretend that for that quarter, because my schedule was always changing, on Tuesday nights after dinner or around dinner time, it was like your night. So I would know that that was happening. And then you would make plans with like a friend or to do something and to go out to eat or whatever. And then similarly, like maybe on Wednesday nights, it was my night. So I'd like go to a yoga class or meet up with a friend or whatever. And it was just a time scheduled into the week always that really helped, I feel like, in that time period of our life. At least me, I remember that being like a huge reprieve. Like I remember going to those yoga classes at night and just being like, I needed this hour and a half to be able to just know that like you were feeding him and getting him to sleep and I was going to just not be on for that time, you know? So those kinds of things I think are big too. One other question here that is a common one that I want to make sure we get to is like the idea of adding more kids. So advice for dads of one considering to add on a second kid or just the idea of adding more kids. Like what's kind of your overall thought on that?
I think that if you're batching them, it's great. And by batching, I mean like scheduling out, not scheduling like the moment, but like having a rough idea of the timeline in which you want to do that. The more that you have them at the same time, the better, because it's like, you're already not sleeping. Let's just run it back. You know, like, you know, it's fine. I think any more that question is, I don't view that question as, oh, having a baby is so challenging that, you know, having multiples is just is overwhelming to me to consider. I think really, for me, when I hear having multiple children, I think of 15 years from now. And from a financial aspect, from a societal standpoint, from a even like all the systems, I'll say it, all the major systems in our society are eroding, you know, like all the major pillars that we use and rely on, they're changing, they're eroding, they're being replaced, whether that's the medical system, the financial system, the media, all the systems. What is that going to be like in 15 years from now? And do I want to introduce my child to experience all of that? You know, and in my mind, I said yes, because I felt that like I would do a good job and you would do a good job as parents for these kids, and that they would grow up to be good people and good and potentially good people in society, because we need people. Society needs good people too, right? So if we can teach them the little secrets and the pieces that aren't taught and raise them to be well-rounded, great individuals, then that's great for us. And then also great for the larger society at large. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. I know things are a little dicey these days with some of societal's happenings, but I think in the same breath, it's like, it's going to take people like our kids and our peers and people like that to kind of like shift into a new change anyway.
Yeah. And I will say too, like about even just like adding, what is it like to have more kids and stuff? To me, it's like, you're already there. Like you just said, sort of, you're already, yeah. Go ahead.
One thing I would say is like having one kid, that's a challenge. Having two kids, you just found a playmate for that first buddy. And I know that you talk about this on podcasts all the time, having one versus two or whatever. When that second kid comes in and they're at an age where they can play with the first one, game changer.
Yeah.
All the time, all of the effort that you spent on that first kid and the second kid, trying to get them to a point where they can communicate and they're old enough to like walk and do all the things. It's like all of a sudden they have a teammate and it takes all that workload off of you. If you didn't have a second kid, you're still managing a lot of those ins and outs, you know? So to me, like when we had a second kid and she got to the age that she could play with the first one, I was like, oh, this is great.
Right. I know. And now we're at the point where it's like the first two are off running around all of the time together. And sometimes the third one joins in on that, but it's like, sometimes, you know, time goes on where it's like hours that they're just off doing whatever. And I feel like too, one thing that I can really see now after having a fourth that people said was like, if you can get through the first three, if you can have three, that three is the hardest. And I would agree with that. I think our third's personality for that first year was extremely tough, but also it's like, yeah. You're outnumbered, all of those dynamics, whatever. But by the time you're having a fourth one, child number one is old enough usually, unless you crammed them all in really fast, is old enough usually to be like really self-sustaining. And it's like, oh, I can see how people have these like huge families now. So anyway, okay, we've got to go. Wes, thank you so much for coming back on again. I love you so much. I think you're so smart and cool. And this episode makes me want to have another baby. So there's that.
I think me and Leah's husband, Mike Gordon, are going to have a podcast in the next season. So keep your eyes out.
Oh my gosh. Are you?
Know about it.
Okay. All right. Bye. There is a lot of education out there for pregnancy and birth, and thank goodness for it. But what about postpartum? Many parents feel blindsided by how dynamic and intense the first few weeks with a newborn can be, and I've created a course to change that. Introducing the Immediate Postpartum Series. In this 11-video course, I teach you and your partner about all of the different types of decisions that need to be made right after your baby is born, the ways that your body and your baby's body will be changing rapidly over those first several days and weeks, how to recover from birth, whether it's a vaginal or cesarean delivery, how to establish breastfeeding, it's basically a breastfeeding 101 course, and the nuances of stool changes, diaper tricks, newborn sleep, placenta options, mindset, circumcision, and more, so that you and your partner know what to expect and can feel prepared and confident in what is normal and what is not, and get back to enjoying your new baby. Click the link in the show notes to start prepping now. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.